Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're at WEKT in Elton, Kentucky. We're going to be talking with Beth Mann today and a couple of her employees, program director and operations manager, about small town AM radio making improvements both in technical quality and in community service. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I don't know if Beth's tower has a light bulb, at least not this one.
This one does not, okay. But I do have some towers with lights, so right. And I know it costs a lot to run them.
It can. So, hey, welcome into the show. I'm glad you're here. Normally, I'm in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, but today I'm in Elkton, Kentucky at the new studio of WEKT. It's on the public square. I can see the courthouse right outside. So, you know, if I do something wrong, I'm sure they got a jail in the basement. Now that's where I'll be. I'm here with Beth Mann. We're going to be talking to Beth. We're also going to be talking to Joshua and maybe Bill as well.
Yeah.
About this radio station. Not exactly new. It's like renewed, right?
It is.
And so we'll be talking to Beth about some technical things, some technical choices. We do have Axia right here in the room with us. And we're also going to be talking about the impetus. Well, why did Beth buy this radio station and is doing with it something that I wish more stations would do? And some of Chris Starr, the stations that Chris Starr works with, are doing a few similar things as well. Speaking of Chris, he's here. Chris, welcome in. Good to see you, man. How are you?
Greetings and salutations from Oguanago, Wisconsin. I'm doing fine, thanks. Things are good. I've been busy driving around. What did I have going on? The life of an engineer in small market radio. The other day I had to go from my house in Oguanago to Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, which is about an hour away, to work on the streaming computer there and a codec. Then I went from there to Portage, Wisconsin, which is a two-hour drive. Had to do a codec there and a couple other minor things. Then I went from there to West Bend, which is another two-hour drive because we're moving into a new facility there. And then I finally got to go home. So that was just one day this week that I was on the road, and there have been many more recently. So been busy.
I'm going to guess that you have a few hotel points built up, Chris Tarr.
In fact, there is more than one hotel where I'm addressed as Mr. Tarr. So, you know, you got that right.
Hi, Mr. Tarr. We have your bed waiting for you.
That's right.
Hey,
it's a true story. There's one hotel that I stay at, and the day manager knows me by name. So I'll walk out in the morning and, oh, hi, Chris. How you doing? Back again? Yeah, I'm back again, and I'll be back again later. So that's the life.
Well, Chris, I must say you have the personality that a lot of people know you and call you by your first name, don't they?
Yeah, well, you know, I wish that more people would, because it's usually just, hey, jerk, or, you know, you over there.
Sir, I don't believe that for a second. Hey, we've got several guests to be on our show today, and one of them is Beth Mann. Hello, Beth. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good to see you. You've been on the show before.
I have been on the show before. We did a radio museum feature. I don't know, right after we opened the radio room that now has about three times the radios that it had when you were there.
It didn't have any room in it before.
I know. I just had to keep rearranging. You know, we had to go up and out and back. So, yeah, we're at about 350 radios now.
Now, the place where we talked to you before is your headquarters, your cluster of stations in what town?
In Katy's, Kentucky. And the radio room we opened in late 2019, and we started kind of letting the public become more part of that right at the end of the year. And then, of course, 2020, we all know what happened. So
for our viewers who didn't see that, that this radio room that you mentioned is part of a community room. So you've taken your radio station facilities and you it looks to me like you actually make this available, certainly for station events. And if some community organization needs to have an event, you may be open to that idea.
Yeah, we host a lot of things there. We've never really rented the space out. We didn't build it for that because we have plenty of facilities like that. We don't want to compete with them in any way. But we've hosted the historical societies. We've hosted chamber events. We've hosted our own parties. We've hosted the Big Deals Conference, which is, by the way, out of Minnesota. We've hosted that several years now. We've hosted broadcasters events and several different things there. And it's a lot of fun.
And I must say, for a small town radio, my impression is your stations do pretty well. You've got a good sales staff and you've got a lot of good local programming going on for local stations.
Absolutely. I mean, we are 100% believe that a great station has to have both. You have to have terrific programming, and then you have to have a terrific sales team. If you're short one or the other, you're probably going to come up short at the end of the year.
And I'm going to guess that your experience with other media, specifically television, but also you seem to have a great online presence, that kind of plays into your sensibilities about promotion, outreach, and getting news out, not just through the normal radio airwaves, but other ways as well.
Absolutely. Digital is huge in our company. We adapted very early. I mean, we had websites before 2000, long before 2000. We had about 19, I guess our first site was probably 95 or 6. And so digital is big for us. I mean, we bill a lot of revenue on digital, but we get it. We understand it. And in fact, this station, you know, we built largely around the digital products. So excited about that.
Well, and this station is what we're going to be talking about during this podcast, WEKT. It's a 500-watt daytime station and 18 watts at night. So, you know, it doesn't have huge coverage at night, but they are hugely involved with the local community. And we're going to look a little bit at the technical facilities, but mostly talk about what Beth's vision is and how that can work in a small town. We also have the program director for WEKT. Joshua is going to be with us. And Bill, what's Bill's title? What does he do?
Bill is our operations manager and program director for the whole country, for the whole country stations, all of our stations, actually. He's kind of my number two guy. Okay. I mean, he and I've been together 20 plus years.
Okay. Good deal. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break and talk about Nautel. You know, winter is a great time for you to maybe take a little break, relax, get in front of your computer or your mobile phone, whatever it is, your tablet, and take a look at some educational opportunities from Nautel. This is one of the things I love about Nautel. Nautel not only supplies great AM and FM transmitters and HD radio systems and DAB systems and DRM systems, they do all that, of course, but they also are highly involved, just as Beth is with her community. Nautel is involved with the engineering community, providing you with a lot of educational opportunities online. If you need to go review something quickly, you can do that at nautel.com. You can go to their webinar page. You can also look at all their other resources that they have available online. The Transmission Talk Tuesday discussion roundtables, those are on hold for a little while. We'll find out from Jeff Welton when those get back on. But there's lots and lots of other archived shows that you can watch and webinars as well. Anything from translators, disaster survival, digital radio, the business of radio, the Nautel users group, HD radio, all the Transmission Talk Tuesdays are archived as well. Plus webinars about AM transmitters and FM transmitters, site care, tools and analysis. So lots and lots of things available at the Nautel website. I really hand it to Nautel. I would hope that you will also support Nautel because of all the things that they do for us, for us engineers in the broadcast community. Give them a little love back and check out their website. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. It's very much appreciated. Chris, you take care of a lot of small town stations. Beth owns some small town stations. We were talking before the show started about some similarities. And Chris, why don't you give us a little rundown of some of the things that stations that you work with are doing in your communities, and then we'll compare that with what Beth has to say.
Sure. Well, you know, my coworker who basically built the company from the ground up to, you know, 20 some stations now, is a radio guy like the rest of us. And he very firmly believes in the power of radio in terms of making local connections, serving local advertisers and listeners, getting them together. We do a lot of live local sports. We do a lot of local news. You know, everybody who's involved in the station is right nearby. So that's very important to us. We very much, while we sound, you know, we have a very good polished sound, we very much are, you know, we're very local stations. We kind of have to be by nature. I mean, we operate in a lot of markets that are just outside of large cities. But we've talked before about this. One of the reasons that he brought me in is because of the large market experience I had. You know, first of all, he realizes that guys like me, you know, there's nothing much else once you get there to do other than something that is, you know, more life balance, which this certainly is, you know, working for a family-owned company. But, you know, his feeling is very much, you know, just because we're small doesn't mean we have to sound small, or, you know, we need to be financially responsible, but we don't have to be cheap, you know, those sorts of things. So, you know, as he said, we're making a commitment to the community that includes things like engineering and all those sorts of things. So, you know, it's very important that, you know, our sports games sound as good as they can be. It sounds, you know, it's important that, you know, all of our broad sounds good, or the live stuff sounds good, and all those sorts of things. So we, you know, we kind of deal with those same sorts of things, and especially because there are several markets where we're it. I mean, you know, unless you're listening to Madison or Milwaukee or something like that, if you're in Reedsburg, Wisconsin, it's our stations. You know, if you're in Portage, Wisconsin, it's our stations. But then we're right there with the stations booming in from the other big markets around it. So it's an interesting challenge that way. But like Beth, I mean, you know, it's a commitment, you know, and it's a commitment we make to not only to try to run a business, but to, you know, to run a business, to do well for our advertisers, to do well for our listeners, and to have fun and to do radio is really, you know, those are our goals.
So I want to ask Beth about her community involvement and how you get people involved here and what that means for your on-air operations. And after you talk about that for a few minutes, I want to ask you about the alternative way of doing things that a lot of people lament, but so many stations have done, which is kind of turn into a jukebox. But let's talk about the good stuff first. And you know, and that interesting balance. Hey, if we go down that jukebox road, you know, what's the inevitable end of that versus what you seem to be doing now? So talk to me about your involvement here in Elkton.
Well, first of all, I think that if you're going to serve a community and you're going to carry that license in honor of that community, then you owe it to that community to fully serve it. So to me, it's super serve on steroids, and that's just expectation. That's lowest unit right there. You have to be willing to super serve the community you're in. If you can't do that, then I think you should pass and let someone else have that opportunity. So when we started looking at whether we were going to buy this station, one thing that we looked at is, can we staff that and do the job that we need to do to really super serve it? And I think you have to be in the community. You have to be willing to put everything you have into it. And so we've done that. I was really fortunate. My first job in broadcast industry was when I was in college, and it was in low power television. And my lifetime mentor that the radio room is named after, DJ Everett, said to me one day, there's nothing about our station that's low power. It's just what it's called. And we will never treat it like it's a low power station. So even, and that was before internet, and that was before streaming capacity, mm-hmm. You know, I was taught that it doesn't matter what your power is. It matters what your programming is. And it matters that people care enough that you have something on that they want to see or they want to hear. So I never came through the ranks of you have to have 100,000 watt FM station to be a powerful entity. I never experienced that, because my first job was that of, your job is to make your station great enough that people will find a way to get it and they'll come to you. So I still don't have 100,000 watt FM station, but people don't know that. The community thinks that we have the largest station in the market. We actually have the smallest station in the market. So it's all a matter of perception. And we market and promote it like it is a 100,000 watt FM station in New York City. I mean, we really focus on the fact that it's quality, and we never let anybody do things that make us look like we're small town. Although we're proud to be from small town, and we've done some things with WEKT that I've never done with any of my other stations, because we want it to be extremely local. We don't want to be the slick, polished sounding New York City station here. We want to be all things Todd County. Todd 1070 is how we even image and brand it. We call it the name of the county because we want it to be 100% about this county. It either needs to be happen in Todd County, or it needs to be about Todd County, or it needs to be something of very high interest to people in Todd County. And if it doesn't, it doesn't need to be here. It's pretty simple.
Wow. You also, you've taken this message out to groups like the Rotary Club. You speak to groups to promote the station, but also to let people know, here's what we're doing in your town.
We do. Before we ever even put together numbers to consider buying the station, I reached out to a community leader in Todd County, and I said, I want to meet with you. He came over. We had a three-hour lunch, and I said to him, I'm thinking about buying WEKT. And if we do that, I need to know, will the community support it? Does the community want it? You know, can this work? And so at the end of our meeting, he said, what do you want me to do? And I said, I would love to meet with some other community leaders. I'd like to have some conversations at a round table. That's a very honest conversation, because I'm going to invest heavily here. I mean, I'm going to put my heart and soul in this. And he's 40 minutes from my office. And before I could get back to my office and get my computer cranked back up and get focused again, I get a text message from him. He said, we're on for, he said a time, where, and who all was going to be in the meeting. And literally, I'm talking about less than an hour, he had that meeting put together. So I came to Todd County, I came to Elkton, I met with those community leaders, and we just talked very openly about what we wanted to do and what I was thinking about doing with the station. And they said, we're in.
You know, I think that's interesting that even with all the other media choices that people have these days, that these people were excited that you wanted to make this station local and to some degree live, but always local programming.
Right. There were people in the room that knew me, but they also knew our company. I was born and raised in Elkton, which is where we're sitting here today to do this feature. Moved away from here when I was 12 years old. And my love for radio started with WEKT. We lived right across the street. My grandmother did when they were building the station. And I mean, literally, I could have thrown a baseball and hit the radio station from her house. And I came home one day, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. I told my mom, I said, when I grow up, I'm going to own radio stations. Mom says, sure, honey, I'm sure you will. And go play. And so that's all I've ever wanted to do. This year, I will celebrate 40 years in the broadcast business, 10 in television, 30 in radio. And to get to come back and buy my hometown radio station is really extra.
That's
extra
cool.
Special.
Yeah.
Way cool.
And we talked about the headquarters that you have over in Katy's, Kentucky. And it's a pretty impressive looking building. Former restaurant next to the interstate. Big sign. It's lighted up. You've got some cameras that show traffic and weather. And when I was a meteorologist on Channel 4 in Nashville, we used your cameras pretty regularly. So thank you for that.
Right. Right. And it's part of our digital plan. You know, I mean, those are all sponsored cameras, and that money adds up pretty fast.
Really? Yeah. So how far is Katy's away from Elkton?
We're 40 minutes from headquarter to headquarter. And, you know, a lot of people thought that we would just fold WEKT right into that facility. Mm-hmm. And that's not how we roll. I mean, each of our stations, we believe that we need a facility right there in the town that we're serving. So that's how we ended up with this facility right on the public square. We started with an empty building. I mean, this room was actually a conference room, a little small waiting area for an insurance company, Knuckles Insurance in Elkton. And they had a table and chairs and a little light fixture, and that was really just intended for people to be able to sit here and wait if they were waiting to see someone. And there was nothing else available on the square that would really fit our needs. There were maybe two buildings, and they were both really construction projects. And so that's how it happened. I mean, literally that company, they saw me peeking in the window one day. I was taking pictures of some opportunities that I thought we might could be in comfortably. It was too small. I'm like, I don't think we can do this, which kind of helped lead to our decision to go digital in Axia.
Gotcha. And so, yeah, let's touch on that real quick. And after our next commercial break, we're going to bring in either Joshua or Bill. And so this is your first studio where you've implemented some digital audio technology. Tell me about that decision.
It is. Well, first of all, we're aging out on all of our other facilities, and we needed to be thinking about future. So January of last year, January of 2023, we established a futures team in our company, and it is our next generation of leadership. And so that team, we meet about every 5 or 6 weeks, and we talk about things that generation's focused on and what they're working on. And we're trying to prepare that generation for where we're going, what's next in the broadcast industry. And that, you know, to me, I'm not worried about a competitor. I don't think that's going to be our greatest epic event that causes us to change the way we operate. It's going to be not training the next generation to love this industry the way I love it and the way Bill loves it. And so we're very focused on who's next. And we're putting a lot of energy in that. So this gave us a chance to put equipment in place that generation will be using for many, many years to come. And it was a great opportunity for us to learn how to use this equipment with this facility and this operation. And then when we get ready to go to the next level, we're not learning for the first time how to program something or how to set our presets. You know, we've already done all of that. We're comfortable with it. And then we can make that transition on the other stations much more quickly and easily.
When you come back toward the end of the show, I want to ask you about your partnership locally with the high school and the young people that you're bringing in here to train. Sounds like me when I was in high school and rewriting news stories. So
absolutely. That's the part I'm really excited most about. So yeah, I look forward to telling you all about that.
So after our commercial break, right now, make a choice. We're going to talk to Joshua or Bill.
I think let's talk to Bill.
Okay. And what will we be talking about?
You've been voluntold.
I'd like for you guys to talk about his transition. I mean, he's an analog guy. He's also spent probably close to 40 years in the business.
He looks analog.
He's analog. So for him, you know, I remember us having many conversations that we're not going to full on digital anything because it's all in or all out. And I think, you know, we both of us had to retrain ourselves to think about it from a different perspective. And we're still learning every day. We're used to teaching, and instead we're in the learning seat, and that's different.
Hey, Chris, I'm sorry I interrupted what you had said a moment ago.
No, I was just telling him, saying that she voluntold him to get on there next. So
voluntold.
He's used to that.
That's good. Hey, and when we come back from this quick commercial break, Chris, I'd also like your thoughts about when people who work with your company, Magnum Media, when they transition from analog studios into new digital studios that you build them. That'll be interesting to hear about. Beth, we'll look forward to seeing you back here in just a little bit. Okay.
Absolutely.
Beth Mann is with us. We're at WEKT in Elkton, Kentucky. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tarr. And now it's time for Chris Tarr to talk to us about Angry Audio. Chris?
Well, you know, as I was mentioning before, you know, we have smaller stations in the shadows of large markets, but we don't want to sound audio quality wise, we don't want to sound small. We want to sound like $1 million. We want to sound like 100,000 watts. So, you know, we do a lot of work on our audio chain. And recently we've moved to using chameleons from Angry Audio. And we had a friend of mine who drove through town not too long ago, and he called Dave, my coworker, and said, "Hey, what are you doing with your audio? It sounds fantastic. I've never heard anything like that before." And he said, "Oh, well, you know, Doc Tarr has some secret sauce or whatever." And so he called me and I said, "Oh yeah, we're using the Angry Audio Chameleon." And my boss is like, "You can't tell him that." And I said, "Why can't I tell him that? That is our secret weapon." And I said, "Dave, I hate to break the news to you, but it's not so secret anymore. It is." We are, of course, talking about the Angry Audio Chameleon C-Level Studio Audio Processor. It is fantastic. Now, it used to be in the olden days, you'd be using compellers or you'd be using Ariannes as an AGC, either ahead of your STL or before your audio processor. The new hotness is the Chameleon C-Level. It transparently creates just an amazing, it's almost analog warmth that I really can't describe. You got to hear it to understand it, but it works so much better than any AGC that's built into a processor. So if you have you know, like a modern Omnia or OptiMod audio processor, it'll sound better with the Chameleon. If you have an older processor, it will blow your mind. It will sound amazing. It brings new life to the like the 8100s or the Omnia ones, things like that. They keep the levels consistent. They keep them warm. They keep them program dependent so that it's you don't have gain fighting each other. You have different bands of gain control. Basically, I like to say in Corny, we trust. Cornelius Gould put a lot of work into this. And basically, his efforts have paid off for the rest of us. And they come in different flavors. There's the C-level for your on-air programming. There's also there's the C6. There's the C6S software processor. All have similar, nice, warm sounds. A little bit different functions, though. Some are for streaming. Some are for live streaming. Some are for audio projects like the plug-in. And then there's the C-level, which is for on-the-air. So as much as it drives my boss nuts to tell you what our secret weapon is, it's the Chameleon C-level. Contact your favorite broadcast vendor today or check them out online at angryaudio.com. Don't get angry. Get C-level. You'll love it. C-level from Angry Audio.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. And thanks to Angry Audio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We've got some Angry Audio gear right here in the studio. We have a guest gizmo just right in reach here. It's pretty cool. Hey, our show is also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. And Max Connect does more than just the wireless we've been talking about for several years. They're actually a full-service company providing engineering services to broadcasters all across the nation, really. They kind of focus on the Southeast and the Eastern U.S., but if you've got a job out West, they'll be glad to take care of that too. You ought to check out maxconnect.com. I know it's spelled funny, M-A-X-X-K-O-N-N-E-C-T, but they do things like studio construction, both analog and audio over IP. That means they can handle Wheatstone, Axia, those kind of things. They do transmitter installation, transmitter site upgrades. They have tower services available now, automation installation and setup, connectivity solutions between different sites. They do streaming services themselves, audio processor installation and setup. I got to tell you, they're good at that. Grounding installation and upgrades, and that's so key. You want to keep your equipment alive during thunderstorm season. Well, Max Connect will do the job right. They also do site monitoring and control. They can either set that up for you or they can handle it for you. Do diligence inspections if you're getting ready to buy or sell a radio station, and they do NRSC measurements, and they do those in full compliance with the FCC rules. So check them out if you would. Max Connect, that's Josh Bone and his company. What a good guy. I mean, this guy is just puts together an excellent company with great technical ideas and these high quality services. Max Connect, maxxkonnect.com. Thanks a lot, Josh Bone, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we got somebody replaced Beth here for a few minutes. Hi there, you're Bill.
Hi there, I'm an analog thinker in a digital world. Nice to meet you.
So, Bill, you you do operations here for the stations. What has that meant over the years?
Just meant missing Christmas Eve with my family. I was sleeping in my car. I heard Chris saying that earlier, yeah. It's continually learning, and a lot of my time is spent with people, but now more so I've taken over a lot more of the engineering duties, which has been an eye-opener for me. Hence, I always have a
look at that.
I'm always prepared to adjust any transmitter. Yes,
well done.
Thank you, Chris. I like you already, buddy. So this was an eye-opener. Beth told me, hey, you know, we're gonna buy a WEKT. I'm like, oh, that's awesome, I love Todd Cunningham. And then she goes, oh, BT Dubs, we're going to be all digital. I'm like, whoa, stop right there. Beth Allison is what I call it. Beth Allison, we're digital. We're 100% on. We're 100% off. Look at these beautiful analog boards we have. I could pop the module off. It's still on the air. I could go find one in my eBay box that I bought some used ones and replace it. But so it's been an eye-opener for us with Axia. But the flexibility of it, as I start to learn more and more, I could see where it'd be very valuable for a small market station.
Yeah, and this is where a lot of stations that have never done digital before, and whether it's Axia or some of the other brands that are out there, typically they're capable of doing more than maybe the installer realizes. We walked in here. Here we have an Axia IQX console. Yes. For those of you who may not know, this It looks like the Radius or the IQ consoles from Axia, but this has the mixing engine built into it. It's not external. Now, it also doesn't have any audio inputs or outputs on it.
Yes, which blew my mind right away. I'm like, where's the XLR cable?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's not one.
There's not one. So, yeah.
It all comes in and goes out over the network,
right?
Which means that your audio inputs and outputs are somewhere else. But it also means that natively, things like you've got a wide orbit automation here, it doesn't have a sound card. It's got an IP driver in it. So just with a network connection to a switch, it's connected to the console. But that also means that, you know, some things are different. There's not a plug you can go plug into.
Right.
So, you know, how do you test it? How do you, you know, can you put a headphones on it or those little fox and hound sniffer? You know, how do you listen for audio?
That's exactly right. And I once got my head around it, and I didn't look at it as an analog mixing board. I looked at it as a computer. Then I thought, you know, when I troubleshoot it like I would if I was having a problem with a computer, and that has helped me a lot.
Well, before we leave here today, we got a couple of things that we can do more conveniently. I'm not saying better, but
yes, we do. We will buy you dinner if you make this happen. I'll be a happy guy.
Well, and the thing about, you know, most of these digital consoles, since they are defined in software, that means there's a lot of things you can do with them. And if you're used to an analog console, you don't even realize that you can do with them.
Oh, so yeah.
You wouldn't even think to ask.
No, here's the crazy. You know, when I started, we had a little Radio Shack strobe light, and you'd pick up the telephone, and then, you know, you have your mix minus, and you hook it up, you put the listener on there. You know, here, we've got a Google phone number. We're almost there, but we're still trying to figure out, okay, if somebody calls on this Google phone number, how do they hear the feed from the station down the line? And, you know, just learning how to massage and customize the software, the sky's the limit if you know some basics.
Well, actually, you bring up a great point because with most consoles, with analog consoles, you had to set up a mix minus and wire that to the telephone hybrid. Yeah. Well, with a digital console like this one, and I don't know about the other brands, but with the Axia ones, every fader can create a mix minus digitally, automatically. You don't have to think about it. And you just type in a few numbers in a field and voila, your mix minus is now feeding your telephone hybrid, or in your case, your Google Voice.
That's excellent.
So it's serendipitous. And hey, Chris, I've been, you know, dealing with audio over IP now for, I guess, right at 20 years. It's really serendipitous when engineers, when radio stations get an audio over IP system, they're still thinking in the analog world. Well, can you make it do this and this and this? Because I used to do this in analog. And so it's cool when they figure out, oh, I can do this and this and a couple other things. I can't tell you, Chris, how many times I've heard people say, Kirk, you never told me it would do X, Y, and Z. He said, well, I can't tell you everything. We'd be here all day. So Chris, I want to ask you.
It took me a long time to get my head around it for those reasons. I kept thinking in the analog realm. I will say, before I go any further, that they don't take liquids any better than the analog consoles.
That's right.
I'm not going to say any more than that, but it acts the same way when you spill stuff in it. I tended to overthink simple tasks like mix minuses and things like that, you know, where I'd, okay, you know, I'm going to program bus four and it'll do that automatically. But then one of the coolest things, especially with the stations that I'm working on now, is the world that opens up once you get it. And you go, now, wait a minute. And you start to think of all of these things that you've been doing and thinking, well, how can I integrate that into Axia? And a great example I've brought up before, and you and I have talked about this, is we have our playout system is Symbian. And it used to be with Symbian that you'd have to get these broadcast tool switchers to make switches, from satellite to live, or in our case, we would do sports through a phone patch and all those sorts of things. And those switchers are noisy and they're unreliable. Well, you know, it turns out that we were fairly easily able to interface Symbian with a few commands to change the audio routes inside of a node. And so we were able to replace all of our switchers with what we were already using with the Axia nodes. And it was just one of those things where it was kind of like Wizard of Oz. You had that, you know, you had that ability all along. It just took us some time to figure that out. And I think that's one of the hardest parts when you first get into digital is you have to kind of break every conceived notion you have about 66 blocks and everything else and realize that it's all just out there. And it's just what the controller does is it just basically tells what, you know, what ones and zeros to put where. And as somebody once said to me, it's just a big joystick, really. You know, the engine's the computer and the console's the joystick. It doesn't really do anything more than that. So, I think especially in smaller markets, I've done a couple of small market stations that weren't even in our group that I just happened to do because I'm the Axie guru now. Where I showed them some of these features for things that they were doing and I showed them how this could simplify that. And they were just blown away. And, you know, they'd go, well, what about this? Like, yeah, we can do that. You know, the first time I showed them that they could actually take one piece of remote gear and share it among their three stations and have talk back from each of them, you would have thought that they won the lottery. Cause you know, they were like having to flip switches and do patch cables and stuff like that. So no, it's just put it on the network once. You can bring it up in any studio, and whoever has it gets the talk back, you know, or gets the mix minus feed. Yeah. You know, just things like that. It's just worth their weight in gold for sure.
Chris, if you were in Bill's position, transitioning into a digital studio, of course, I like to tell people it's really not any different. You got an on-off button and a fader, and you've got program assignment buttons, but that's oversimplifying. Chris, what do you do when you go into a facility and you upgrade it into typically an Axia setup that's now digital? How do you approach this with the talent?
I get paid in advance. It's you'd be surprised because I think, you know, I think sometimes we're so stuck in the old ways that we kind of step on rakes trying to recreate that. Ooh. Consoles are the same. You know, the audio playback systems are the same. We keep trying to come up with, you know, analog looking things for digital. And, you know, basically, you know, the talk that I've had with the talent is, you know, try to forget what you know. And one of the things that I've always been big on through my career is our job as engineers is to remove all the barriers that are there for the talent to be creative. And so I the way I tell it to them is the sky's the limit. You just tell me what you want to do and we can make that happen. But, you know, don't think that, you know, that this is just the way, you know, this is a static situation. You want to move your microphone over to this side of the board in the morning? No problem. We can do that. Does it work better for you? You know, do you want to, I had one guy that was so excited when I said, okay, set everything up the way you like it, volume wise with headphones and everything else. I saved it to his profile. I said, now, whenever you bring that up, it'll be exactly the way you left it. And it got to the point where like, you know, they'd find a sweet spot somewhere and they'd call me and go, hey, can you capture this so I can save it as a, you know, as a preset? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think at first they're a little bit afraid of it, but once they start to play with it and see all of the different things it can do, they get as excited as we are because in their creative minds, they're thinking of all the cool things they can do with it. And that's what really gets me going is to hear those things and to help them, you know, make that kind of stuff come alive. It really is a lot of fun to watch.
Good deal. Well, Bill, now you have a few more ideas. What do you, how do you treat talent? How do you approach them? Or how do you train people in here? That kind of thing. How do you carry that job out?
Well, last training session we had, we've got a young guy who has started with the company, has been with us a little over a year and knew quite a bit about computers, but was learning radio. He was the first guy we trained on this board because he produces all our ball games. And so then we brought staff in. So they brought air staff in and he literally made videos for everybody as they walk through. They just took out the little smartphone and made a little video about, hey, this is what you do. This is how you get this on the air. You want to reassign this pot for this mic or what have you. Here's how you do that. And here's how you can record something without going out over the air because the sales people in Elston, they'll bring clients in to our studio WEKT and they're recording, you know, it's much better to have some of the client's voice on the ads than us all the time. So we bring them in and they're very nervous at first because they're like, I don't want to put this out on the air. But, you know, we've something today with LiveWire that you showed me, which will help that. We could totally disable the board if we need to, and let the Wide Orbit do its thing while they record the client and not worry about
it. You know, that's a good point.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. I use that LiveWire delegation switcher software.
Yep, that's what I installed here just an hour ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and that it's amazing. And the reason I jumped in is because that's such a simple thing, but it's such a game changer for all of our staff. When I first showed them, I think of all the things that I showed them, that was the most exciting to them, because I was like, click this button, board's yours, do whatever you want. And they just thought that was the most amazing thing. And then, you know, with voice tracking, I was able to set profiles where, you know, it locked the controls on the microphone and things like that. So if they had to use the board with their audio playback, I can't remember what station it was. It was a station where for some reason, the playout had to be live in order to run back to the board or something. But I was able to lock it so that that's all they could do. They couldn't accidentally put anything on the air because they were locked out. But yeah, that whole bypassing the board with the switcher thing is, you know, you want to blow a jock's mind, show them that.
Well, and we do that at all of my stations because, well, we're cheap. We don't have enough boards. You know, we at most of our stations, we don't have a separate production room. The control room doubles as the production room, as it does here. And it's if you don't bypass the board when you want to do production, you always take the chance of putting your production on the air. And that could be very dangerous because, you know, we don't always watch our language when we're doing production.
Never say anything off the air that you wouldn't say on the air. I wish I'd followed that more. Yes.
We're talking to Bill. Bill, what's your last name?
Booth.
Bill Booth. Okay, yes. Good deal. Bill Booth. We're talking to Bill Booth, and Josh was coming up in a few minutes. Hey, Chris, we want to chat for a minute about Broadcast Tools and a product from Broadcast Tools that we haven't talked about before. Now, I'm going to talk about the earlier version that they still have, but they've got a new version. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. And this is something called the SS 2.1 MLR BNC. That's a lot of words. It's the BNC switcher and router. The SS 2.1 MLR BNC is a transparent two-input, dual-output switcher router with mechanical latching relays and BNC connectors. Now, the SS 2.1 MLR BNC is perfect for composite, MPX, or other types of passive signal switching via front panel switches or via contact closures or serial RS-232. Now, the switching is accomplished with mechanical latching gold contact relays, and that means that the unit can route a signal in either direction if you want to, you know, use it backwards. Due to the passive nature of the switching, any input level and impedance can be used. Inputs can be balanced or unbalanced, while output levels, impedance, distortion, noise, and balancing are going to match that of the selected input. So this unit can be controlled and monitored locally and or with simple contact closures to ground, as well as with multi-drop RS-232 serial commands. So how would you use this? Well, lots of ways to use it. One way, of course, would be to decide which audio processor is going to feed your transmitter at the analog multiplex level. You could also use it, let's say, at the studio to decide which air chain or which audio processor, which stereo generator is going to feed your composite STL if you're using a composite STL. So there's lots of ways to use this thing that makes sense for main and backup, or even switching cities or switching, you know, where your programming is coming from. Now, it's not on the website yet, but they do have a new 6-input version of this. It's the SS 6.1 MLR BNC switcher router. Again, it has mechanical latching relays. You can control it from the front panel, or you can use contact closures or serial, or it'll also take TCP UDP commands over Ethernet. And this is advertised in the brand new Radio World 2024 sourcebook and directory if you want to read more about it right now, and they'll have it up on the website pretty soon. So this is from Broadcast Tools, and you know Broadcast Tools. If you can think of it, they probably make a solution. Actually, at one of my transmitter sites, I was going to build something that does the same thing, and I was just, I had my brain wrapped around mechanical latching relays and buying surplus ones and all that, and then I found it from Broadcast Tools. I'm not building it. I'm buying it already made, and really a much better design than I was going to do from Broadcast Tools. And where can you get these? Well, from Broadcasters General Store. Go to the website, bgs.cc, Broadcasters General Store, Or, of course, you can give them a call at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700 for BGS, Broadcasters General Store. Bill, they got sharp pencils there.
They do. We buy a lot. We go to the general store a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah, we do. Okay. Yeah. That's where we...
All the gear in this room.
Stuff. This room is Broadcast General Store, yeah.
Glad to hear it. So before we get to your colleague, Joshua, any more advice you want to give us about operations in this day and age? I know that most of our audience here are engineers, but plenty of engineers double, as you do, as an operations person. For 2024 and beyond, what do you think are some of the key things that radio operations people need to have at the forefront of their mind?
Oh, I think a lot of it is trying not to be a firefighter, trying not to wait till there's a fire and you've got to go fix something, preventative maintenance. And I'm a big belts and suspenders guy. So if I've got a backup, even though if my AM transmitter goes down, I've got a backup. It may not be quite as powerful, but it will keep us on the air. Yeah. And redundancy as far as STL, if that's possible, or a big believer in frequency agile STL units, or you know, and thinking about going into the winter, we've got some remote locations where our sticks are. So a lot of times we have backup generators there, but they run off of propane. We've been measuring the amount of propane we've got, a preemptive fill on the propane tank, make sure we're ready. And engineer's best friend in the winter, I learned the hard way, is some spray de-icer. Because when you're going in to fix the transmitter that's broken, if the lock is frozen, you're not going anywhere. So, you know, wasp spray in the summer in Kentucky and then de-icer in the winter and you're good to go.
I'm wondering, I see here at this studio, and it's just off camera, there's an electronic lock to unlock the studio door. Now, we're inside, temperature controlled. Do those things work in a cold, cold environment, you know?
I don't know. We don't have them in cold, cold. We have a combination padlock, which can get a little stubborn at one of our physical locations, but nothing to do with transmitter. It's all key entry.
I want to ask Chris Tarr what he thinks about this topic. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I have those and they do work.
In the cold, okay. Even in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we have not had any issues with it. Yep.
Good to know.
Does he have spray de-icer? You probably know more about winter than I do.
Oh, I have cans of spray de-icer in the truck. I don't go anywhere. There's a couple things here in Wisconsin. We all have four-wheel drive, we all have spray de-icers, and we all carry chainsaws. So, but you know, those are the kind of the trifecta there, because more often than not, we get so much snow that trees tend to fall across the access roads to the transmitter sites. So, you know, more than once I've had to be a lumberjack and go out there and, you know, cut trees and get out of the way. So, you know, you guys down there, you guys, we don't have to deal with like snakes and other creepy crawly things, but, you know, we have the big game up here. We got deer all over the place. I have my little, trail cams that I have to keep an eye on sites, and every day I look and there are just nothing but deer going in and out. So Charlie Wooten's always jealous about that.
Oh, wow. Hey, and you know, it's interesting, different places, you've got different critters to worry about. Our guest last week was Paul Walker from KSKO in McGrath, Alaska, right? And I had sent him a little donation to KSKO, and he sent me a little love offering back. He sent me a little coffee mug, and he sent me a cookbook, the KSKO cookbook. And so now I have the recipe for moose stew.
Nice. Yeah. Squirrels too. Them's good eating. Squirrels are good eating.
Yeah. Possum stew. We got a lot of possums.
Possum. There you go. Right. Yeah, we don't.
All right. Well, hey, we've got another guest coming in right here. Bill, good talking to you.
Yes, sir. Good to be on the program. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming to lovely, picturesque Elkton.
All right. Thank you very much. Chris, back to you for a second while we do a little switch-o change on the seats here. And Chris, we're going to get ready to talk about program direction in this age of lots of digital programming. So, Chris, talk to us for a minute about how you interact with program directors.
Oh, that's easy, because I was one for many, many years. I was on the air and a program director. So, you know, I think, first of all, it makes me a lot better at what I do, because I understand the challenges. You know, I can understand the frustration when things don't work the way they're supposed to. But I also think one of the things that really helps is because I get that part of the business. So when a program director comes to me with some wild scheme, you know, I don't say, well, why do you want to do that? Or, you know, oh, that's impossible. I sit there and go, oh, that's cool. Let's do it. And I come up with a way to make it work. And that's always been my, you know, my passion really is to, you know, remove every obstacle that I can between the listener and the talent's creativity and just make it as easy as possible for these people to do what they want to do. And when you can do that, man, it's a lot of fun. And the radio you create is just amazing. And it's also a lot of fun when you can sit there with a program director or the air talent and they tell you this cool idea that they have to do something and you just go, yeah, we can do that. And just their faces light up and, oh, we can do. I was like, yeah, not only can we do that, but you know, we can actually do it, I think, better than what you're thinking. You know, and I think it also, you know, it helped me a lot better to do a lot better with asking questions. You know, my last job at Intercom, you know, I was here for many, many, many years. I remember that the people on the air would say, oh, yeah, our last engineer was Mr. No. He would just say no to everything. And I can see, you know, I get that because a lot of times what'll happen is a program director will say, hey, can we put a huge antenna on top of this building downtown? You're going to go, no, you can't do that. But the proper response is, well, what are you looking to do? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? Because that's probably not the answer. You know, and so, yeah, I can say that isn't going to happen, but there's probably something else we can do to make it happen. So it really led me to now, instead of just saying no, or boy, that's going to be difficult or whatever, is to say, well, what are you trying to accomplish? What do you want to do? And then, you know, I had a sign hanging on my wall in my office that said, you know, I can't remember exactly what it said, but it may be difficult, it may be ill-advised, it may be expensive to do, but it can be done. And, you know, that was also my other thing was, okay, instead of saying no, I'll tell you why I think no, and just go, yeah, we can do that. It'll cost $10,000 to make it happen, but if it's worth $10,000 to you, all right, let's do it. So that's really, I think, you know, where that helped me was having been in that chair to be able to, you know, to interact that way.
Well, we go from Bill Booth, the operations manager, to Joshua Clausen. Hi, Joshua.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Thank you for having me on today.
I understand you and I are just about neighbors in Nashville.
Yes, yes. I live in Midtown Nashville.
Yeah, good part of town. A lot of good restaurants there.
Yes, I'm excited to get out and try some more.
I don't have any restaurants anywhere near. I live in Oak Hill, and they have something against business in Oak Hill. There are none. There's a gas station.
Yeah, I'm surprised if that's the case in Nashville. But.
Well, so you are the program director, newly minted. That's just been announced, right?
Yes. Yes. That transition has been made here within the new year.
Okay. So talk to me about, okay, so Beth Mann's vision for what she wants the station to be. And she doesn't want to be a charity case. I know you've overall, you want to have income, be a part of the community. But how does your efforts in programming how does that, you know, how do you make that jibe with Beth's vision for the station?
Well, we just try to make it as local as possible. That's been the focus with all of our stations, but especially this one here in Elkton and in Todd County. Just make sure, you know, we have the local advertisers that we're reaching out to and promoting the local businesses here in the community. And then along with that, through the weekday, we do our local newscasts, and we're making sure to have local content that matters to the residents of Todd mm-hmm. County, and reaching out to the local officials, attending the local meetings, and making sure that things are running smoothly in the community, or if not, talking about that. If they are running smoothly, talking about that and how, you know, what's going on here in the community. And then just being out in the community too. And that's something we've worked on with all of our stations is, you know, we're out there at the local events.
Right.
And
right.
You know, we're doing live broadcasts, or we're out there meeting folks and learning names and getting to know what this community is all about.
Did you guys have a Christmas parade here in town?
Yes, really? Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yes,
is being part of that is that what was that on your schedule?
Well, that was on our schedule, and then it got rained out the first week we were supposed to do it, and actually ended up having a tornado track through the southern portion of the county.
That was here?
That was just south of here. Thankfully, A few homes suffered some extensive structural damage, but the majority of the damage has already been repaired. It hit some Amish and Mennonite communities, and they've got their stuff already back up and running.
Oh, we drove through there on the way in.
You drove through. You would have been driving through the path if you drove through that afternoon when it came through. Wow. So, yeah. So I got scheduled to the next week, and I wasn't able to make it to that one. So I didn't get to experience the Elkton Christmas parade, but there's a few other communities here in Todd County, and I got to experience the Guthrie, Kentucky Christmas parade. So that was fun. We did a broadcast from that, and then, of course, did the Elkton parade some 2 or 3 weeks later.
So I was on your website, and I noticed that a lot of your news stories that you guys publish have sound bites associated with them.
Yes.
Okay, basic question, because I come from the cassette tape days of gathering sound bites from the local police station and the city council meeting. How do you guys get your sound bites and get them onto your website?
Well, what we do is we take our recorders with us everywhere we go. And when we go to these meetings or when we go and talk to folks, you know, we've got that recorder kind of up in their face, and we record the audio that way. And then we go back to the station or go back home, wherever we're writing the story from. And we edit our cuts with Adobe Audition. Mm-hmm. And then we just we put them on the website, and then we use them on air too. So when you hear our newscast, you're going to hear those audio cuts, and that's just how we they've always done things. And I kind of got involved in that, and have tried to take it to a new level. And we even use our phones too. Sometimes we may not have our physical recorder, but we've got our phone right there with the
what app is that you're liking?
Yeah, so we're using SoundPro.
Sound Pro. Yeah.
Okay.
Sound Pro. And I forget sometimes what we use, but I just know how to use it sometimes.
It's got we'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's a good looking app. And there are plenty of apps that can also just upload to an FTP site right away.
Yes. And I mean, we've got experience with that too in FTP sites. We have a statewide network that the Edge Media Group operates. And that's something I actually got to learn a little bit about today because I'm helping with some of that stuff here in the near future.
What about local sports? I mean, so many stations do local sports, and I know that Beth May. See, I'm not a sports dude, and everybody around me is. You know, Beth was into sports. I'm into people who are into sports. I get my joy from them enjoying the sport. Okay.
Yes.
Like, I don't care about NASCAR, but I got a good friend who does. So we go to NASCAR races together, and I just have a blast because he's having a blast. So tell me about your local sports involvement here.
Oh, we've got some fantastic folks that are doing some of our play-by-play and such. Right now, we're in the midst of basketball season, high school basketball season. So we've actually got a rotating crew of a couple of different guys that are coming in and doing our games for us. And I mean, it's been phenomenal. We just go out to the school and broadcast the game, and it always sounds like they're having a good time. A lot of times, I don't know what they're talking about. But
what equipment are you guys using these days to get the audio back to the station?
Right now, we've got all kinds of equipment that we've been using.
Bill's
breaking it.
Bill's about to have a show and tell with us right here.
This is actually a new thing.
This is going to simplify a lot of things.
I've got one of these.
They made fun of my Shure mixer and my headphone splitter and all the cables. So here we go.
Here we go. We've done a couple of Twerk shows with this exact same Zoom mixer because it plugs right into your computer. Now, so do you use a computer program to get the audio back, or do you make a SIP phone call?
We have a mobile application. Yeah, we have a smartphone application that we're using. The name is escaping me for the moment.
Is it a Comrex or Tyler?
Riverside FM is what we're using here.
Okay.
That's what we use here. And we use the Tyline and some of our other properties in CADAs.
Okay. Good deal. Well, all right. So what are you looking for 2024? Are there programming elements that you want to add? Are there any engineering challenges to getting those done? Or you just depend on Bill or Russ Lafferty or anybody to get those done for you?
Well, the engineering stuff, I'm going to learn a little bit of. I've been dubbed, what is it, you're toddler engineer. Bill is toddler engineer. And of course, Russ is the big man.
Yeah,
He's done some phenomenal things for us and helped us out. And so I'll learn a little bit about that, but I probably won't learn everything on that. But as a thing for programming, we're gonna double down on our local commitment as we go into 2024. We're gonna be here more. We're gonna try to be out at the events more, and try to freshen up things on air too. There's some things we need to tweak and some additional tunes we need to get on as well.
Chris, I'm sure you've got some great people you work with, but wouldn't you like to have Bill and Joshua on your team and some of your towns?
Well, especially, you know, with all this technology they've got, because now when I used to go do live stuff, I'd bring down the stone tablets from the top of the mountain and read what they said. And that was how, you know, we did those live actualities. Looking at my tablet, it says that God said this. So, you know, the technology they have is amazing. But yeah, no, that's awesome. That is outstanding. And again, a great example of, you know, how these super local, super serving stations can use technology to their benefit.
Back in my day, the high tech remotes were done with the solid state, Marty.
I had ones that had tubes. They had to warm up.
Yeah, they did have to warm up. That's right. And maybe you did this. We ended up relegating the tube ones to permanently installed at the churches that were on Sunday morning. We just left them there.
That's right. Yep. And you just turn those on and, you know, then we got into digital and then I just started yelling zeros and ones at people and that didn't work. So
that's right. That's right. Hey, Joshua, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it very much. And good luck with programming WEKT in the year ahead.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, we're going to be back with a final word from Beth Mann here in just a minute. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by another leap ahead in technology, and that is Broadcast Bionics and their virtual rack. Let's take a look at the website. There it is right there. Broadcast hardware that isn't hard. Virtual rack. You know, Bill Booth here was talking about the transition into digital. Ooh, this is a transition. You know, we have an audio console sitting next to us here. How about if it wasn't even here? Like my station's in Oxford, Mississippi, where we have the Axia Altus running virtually. Now, you can make this transition to virtual really easy if you talk to the folks at Broadcast Bionics. They make this product, the Virtual Rack, and you buy a piece of hardware. Okay, that's hardware. But you put it in the rack, you fire it up, and then you choose the apps that you want to install. Apps from Telos Alliance, codecs and audio consoles and audio processors and phone systems. Sound 4 provides audio processing as well, mic processing. And 2WCOM also provides codecs as well. And you can choose from these. You click on an app, you click to install it. It installs in a matter of a minute or two, and it does all the hard work behind the scenes. Now, trust me, containerized apps are not necessarily all that simple behind the scenes. There's networking involved inside the virtual machine that's got to be taken care of properly. And if it's not done properly, it ain't going to work. Well, Broadcast Bionics has done this hard work for you. You treat it like an app. It does the hard work in the background. It really does. And once you get your products, your broadcast infrastructure programs installed, then you would go license them from the various manufacturers. So if you want an Axia Altus console, you buy the number of licenses you want for the number of consoles or the number of faders, or whether you want WebRTC connectivity. That's all separate. You know, that's a separate function, if you will, from the Broadcast Bionics virtual rack, but you do it all in the virtual rack. Cool as can be. If you want to know more about this, including the opportunities for automatic failover and the different things you can do with it, check it out. There's videos on the website. And if you go to bionics.co.uk, then you can, and we'll have a link for it in the show notes here, then you can look at the different videos at the bottom of the page. In fact, Suncast, why don't you scroll down to the bottom of the page there so people can see there are several videos you can choose from. There we go. They've added one. There's three videos now that you can choose from, the showing demos of this. Hey, there's even a prior episode of This Week in Radio Tech where Dan McQuillan, the owner of Broadcast Bionics, was on our show, and he explains this in great detail over the course of an hour, how Virtual Rack works and what it means for you in terms of broadcasting advantage. So check it out. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics, and all the other cool Broadcast Bionics equipment, virtualized or otherwise, like the phone system they have, Camera One, the Bionics Studio, just all the functionalities that they provide. Thanks, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack. Beth Mann is back with us right here. Beth, wow. It's good to talk to your folks here. And what did I say I was going to ask you when we came back? I forget.
You wanted to know about that partnership with the school.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Tell me about that. You probably now have a little better idea of why that's so important to me. I mean, my entire leadership team, we've been together, some of us 30 years, and we're all in our, like, right at 50 to about 63 or 4. So we needed to be thinking about the next generation, Josh being the next generation. So you're in the breaking news business. If you could tell he was a little bit nervous, it's because we've not announced that he's going to be PD. Okay. So you got to break that story, I guess. So that will be announced next week. But when we did that community meeting that I was telling you about earlier, where we sat down and talked about whether this community wanted its own radio station and wanted to do all the things that we know how to do. We're in the news business. We are a news operation. We just happen to play music. We're in the community radio business. We just happen to play music. So, you know, we're our community broadcasting our news is our most important thing. Well, in that meeting was the school superintendent. And we have one high school here. And he said, I've been thinking about our own TV station, our own radio station, even printing a newspaper. You know, I want our kids to have opportunities. I want our kids to be exposed. Well, he and I became instant buddies. And so we put together a curriculum where kids could sign up. He did it himself. He sent it out on Google. Now, the school superintendent sent out on Google to say, hey, there's an opportunity here for you. Would you be interested in these things? And it was sort of a survey, everything from photography to videography to audio design to engineering. Wow. Yeah. We had over 30 kids answer his message during the summer when they were on summer break to say, yes, I want to learn those things.
In this small town,
over 30 kids.
Yeah.
So instantly, he allowed me access to the kids. I came into the school with him. He attended the meetings with me. We started talking with the kids about, this is radio, this is a media, this is digital. These are all things that you can do right here at your own hometown media group. So we've got several kids involved already. We have a young man helping us do color for basketball. Uh-huh. He's doing a great job. He's going to be attending college. He already has a college offer and it's been accepted. We'll be playing sports, and then he wants to be a sports broadcaster. So he's already getting some hands-on experience just by being a part of the Todd County school system.
Amazing. Wow. Is it worthwhile to expand that to any other high schools, or is really keeping it local with Todd County High School where it needs to be?
I really would like to look at that with a second station that we have. We have an AM and FM translator in Caldwell County, which also has one high school. I'd really like to look at doing some type of program there. I fell in love with this business when I was just a kid, 8 or 9 years old, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. It's all I've ever done. And I think there are other kids out there that could do the very same thing if they're given the opportunity, if they even know it exists. So I would encourage stations to definitely think about, you know, how are you bringing up your own farm system? If you want kids to be excited about what you do, you've got to show them that passion, and you've got to give them a chance to learn. And we are not good at that. I think our industry is horrible at training and bringing up young people. I mean, it's like, well, do you have any experience? Well, no, duh. How am I supposed to get experience? So this whole company, this whole division of our company is about the future of our company. And that means working with our high school kids, our college kids. We've got college kids. We've got a high school kid voicing some news stories on air. Mm-hmm. And she's doing a terrific job. She's talented. And, you know, how far along will she be 4 years from now?
Sure. Yeah.
So we owe that. We owe that to the next generation in my mind.
Well, I'll make you an offer right now. If you have people interested in engineering, I can come up and do a half a day seminar on analog and on digital and, you know, computer interaction with networks and things like that. I'd be happy to do that.
100%. I would love that. I do have a young man. He's actually only in the 7th grade. Uh-huh. And he's already a math whiz. He loves computer things. He loves IT stuff. I mean, he's already told me he's going to be an IT guy one day. Huh. So, you know, why not make him a broadcast engineer, right?
Yeah.
We need them desperately.
Yes, absolutely.
We are in desperate
need. And we need people with that extra combination. Like Chris Tarr has, that combination of analog, digital, and IT skills.
As well as rugged handsomeness.
That goes without saying. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that compliment.
We've had this discussion where, seriously though, we all sit here and there's that train coming at us, and we all sit there and go, yep, that's a train coming. We probably should do something about that. Yep. Who's going to do something about that train coming at us? And that's the way we look at broadcasting in the future. It's like, yep, there's going to be a problem. Oh boy, that's going to be a problem. But then we just kind of sit there and what are we going to do? We should do something. So, you know, that's great that you're doing that. And we, what we've started doing is for our public affairs programming, letting the kids produce that, which not only helps us, you know, with our public affairs programming, but also gives them an opportunity to do some of that long form programming as well in areas that interest them. And you're right. It's, you know, a lot of these people just don't, it's behind the curtain. And once they can see behind the curtain, not all of a sudden the interest, like both of you, I fell in love with radio when I was 9 years old, and it's all I've ever done. But it was getting behind those scenes and seeing everything and feeling that magic. And that's kind of missing in people's lives, in kids' lives right now with video games and internet and everything. To take them behind the scenes and show them that is, you know, I think that is what really kicks it into gear.
Absolutely. I agree.
One point I want to be sure to make, mm-hmm. and I mean, if I had time, I'd travel all over the country with this message. If I was 15 years younger, I would buy AM radio stations all over the country, and I would do exactly what I'm doing in Todd County. I'd get our kids involved. We do local news, local sports, local community events. People want programming about them. This is a about me society, big time. What's in it for me? So it doesn't matter if it's on the AM dial. It doesn't matter if it's on the stream, the app, our website. I don't care where they listen or how they listen. I care that they listen. And they don't care where they listen or how they listen if it's about them. So spending the time and the money and the effort to put technology in place where they can listen with ease from anywhere, make your apps sound great, your streams sound great, make sure that things look big time, big league for them. It's really not that difficult. It's not like when I started in the business, it cost a lot of money to sound good. Well, now you can sound really great for a lot less money. You just have to have the desire to do it. You've got to want to be good. And, you know, I'm focused on how do we go from good to great? And all these guys that have AM stations that they could care less if they're on or not because they have a translator, yeah. or they could care less about AM programming. They're throwing it all on their big stick. I'm here to tell you, in Elkton, Kentucky, in Todd County, our AM is doing terrific because it's all about Todd County.
Yeah.
That's the key.
And not only the city leaders and school leaders talking about you, but business leaders are too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, every business we go in, you know, they're listening to our station. They're proud to be a part of Todd 1070 because we've made it something that matters. It's not hidden. It's not in a horrible looking facility. It's not, you know, a dirt floor. It's a really nice, beautiful facility. Studios that are well done, all LED lighting and school colors right on the courthouse square.
Chris, I found out about WEKT and what Beth had done here literally three and a half weeks ago. And you can see why I made it a priority to email Beth immediately. Hey, can we do a torch show from up there? Kick off the new year with this enthusiasm for local radio.
Well, then I'm sure you're trying to get tips because the story you always tell me is, yeah, I own part of a radio station, the part that doesn't make any money.
Well, maybe I got the wrong partner, but I don't know. Oh, gosh. Hey, Beth, thank you so much for joining us. We got to go. We're out of time.
My absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed it a whole lot. Thank you for not making me look stupid on IT issues. I've learned a lot through this project. I really have, even considering doing my own radio show.
Well, we're going to stay a few more minutes and fix up the board for their convenience.
Perfect. That is a great way to pay me for my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Appreciate it. And thanks to Bill and to Joshua and Chris Tarr. Thank you so much for your big participation in today's show. I appreciate you very much. Thanks a lot, sir. And also thanks to Suncast for producing today's show. Really appreciate you, Suncast. And also Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find other fine podcasts. We got to go. We will see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.